Wait, tell me again what we're going to talk about.
Career changers, teachers that had a career before teaching.
Right. And we picked this because we are both career changers.
We are.
Welcome to this episode of Teacher Voice, where Rick and I talk to people about changing careers and learn a lot about what people really think is important in their teaching.
Although I loved math and was a math teacher, I wasn't in the math business teaching students. I was in the student business teaching math.
Stay tuned.
So I'm Kirsten Milks, and I am one of the editor-in-chiefs of Kaleidoscope. I also am a science teacher in Bloomington, Indiana.
I'm Rick Barlow. I'm an associate editor for Kaleidoscope, and I'm a math educator in California.
We've had this incredible opportunity to get to talk with people who change careers to become teachers. And what we found has surprised us.
Yeah, we laughed, we cried.
Multiple times.
I was missing people.
You were missing people.
It felt very lonely in a lab.
This is Valentina Boom Boo. She's currently a curriculum specialist with the City of St. Louis Public Schools. But before that, she was a Sigma Aldrich chemist, a PhD student at Washington University, and then a chemistry and AP chemistry teacher in the St. Louis Public Schools.
So you also have a PhD in science.
I do.
High five.
And it was during the most productive year of her PhD that Valentina met somebody who changed her life.
So what I ended up doing is that I wanted to do something more than just sit in the lab, so I decided to volunteer in Restore Some Voice, which is an organization that helps refugee students or anybody marginalized, or like orphans, refugees, poor, with students helping with their homework. And what the student that was assigned to me was a refugee student from Somalia. And she couldn't read or write
in English or her native language. And the experience of working with that student shifted something for Valentina.
It got to the point that I was like, I never really stood for anything. I never really fought for anything that I was like, what is it that I value? What is it that I would like to do? Where I would like to leave a footprint somewhere. What would I fight for if I had to choose something to fight for? And that was it. I was like, education. That was it.
Like Valentina, Kirsten was a scientist in a lab that decided to become a high school science teacher. Here she is explaining her reasoning for that career change.
I knew that the work that I was doing and the research that I was making available to other people could be important down the road, right? So the work that I did on one really specific protein and cell division was the beginning of a drug target for cancer drugs, right? So the work was important. I wasn't able to see how my work directly impacted things that needed to change in the world. You know, I would open up the newspaper when I got home, and I would try to square the things I was spending my time doing with what was happening in our state and in our nation and in our world. And I couldn't see a fast enough connection. And the part I didn't know that I learned later is that a big part of that for me is feeling like my work matters to somebody. And so, although I didn't have the language for it at the time, I felt very socially isolated and didn't even know that's what was happening.
But feelings of social isolation aren't unique to scientists like Valentina and me. Next, we'll hear from Diara.
My name is Diara Busogay,
a former Wall Street banker who's currently teaching high school mathematics in California.
You are finished with college, which is, Midwestern college town, and you land on Wall Street to be a banker.
Yeah.
What's it like?
As much as I said I wanted to be a banker my whole life, I've done internships there for 2 years, and I thought I could fit, but I didn't fit in. I think most of my colleagues went to Harvard and Yale, Princeton, and that's all they talked about was their school and the stuff they did together when they were in undergrad, and I couldn't relate to anything. No one knew what my college was, and people didn't really take me seriously just because I didn't go to a fancy school. So I felt very isolated culturally as well. Growing up, seeing what my dad did as a banker was very different from what I was doing, so it didn't really make sense to me. And okay. I was
So walk us through what a day is like in this part of your career trajectory. So like you wake up, you go to the office, what happens?
So I wake up at 6. I have to be at the office by 7 when markets open. And we have a morning meeting in the morning with the whole team. By 8, I grab breakfast, I sit down. You can't leave your desk because you have like 6 computer screens and everything is just moving live. So anxiety level, that's the first time I actually dealt with anxiety, and I had no idea I had anxiety. So you can't really go anywhere. You can move in 15 minutes, the market will have moved already. So just looking at graphs and reading things, I was focused on mortgages, and it was right after the crisis. So basically what we were doing were, there were these pools of mortgages, people who did not pay their mortgage and were being foreclosed on, or their houses were being seized, and were buying these non-performing mortgages, we call them. My job, because I was the lowest in the group, was to read the stories. So you go like, Ramon had a car accident and lost 2 limbs and can't pay his mortgage anymore, blah, blah, blah. We took his home. Like these kind of stories you read all day. And let's say that you have 100 mortgages and all these people defaulted because they had accidents or something. We were trying to buy them from the banks that have them at the lowest price because we're trying to convince them they're not going to get paid. And then 2 weeks later, flip it and sell it to another bank for higher. And, you know, you make millions of dollars on those flips, even if it's like you buy it at 20%, you sell it at 25%. But that's what I was doing. I was reading those things, trying to use statistics to model, like, in a pool with this many people in this part of the world, what's the percent of people who are actually going to pay back? Or how do we make it look attractive? How do we bid on these pools? How do we sell them back? So a lot of things were moving, and as much information you could get on these mortgages, the pools, the more you could make informed decisions at how much to buy them for, and then how much to flip them and sell them for later.
But that means you're at your desk reading about people's trauma and tragedy and struggles to try to turn a profit on them.
Yeah, basically.
And after several life-changing events, Diarra left Wall Street and found herself back home in Senegal, not sure what to do next. When a chance opportunity to work as a long-term substitute teacher for the 4-year-olds at a local school led her to a powerful realization.
Honestly, those 2 months were like my rebirth. Like I think being surrounded with kids all day, we're singing songs and we're painting and we're drawing. It was amazing. I don't even know how to explain it, but it was just like, I had no idea what I was doing. This is not in my career plans. This was nothing in my resume corresponds to this, but this is like the happiest thing I've done forever. And I was just feeling so free and excited, and it was just fun. I was helping with art, and then I was helping with music. In music, they are pretending to sing and play things that they can't, but I'm just there like...
Sorry, 4-year-olds.
No, but it was just hilarious. And they are 4-year-olds, and then I get to meet their family and their siblings. And I think what I was really missing was a community, because in my previous jobs, I was always by myself. And for the first time, I'm part of a school, and I know the parents and the siblings, and there are, like, plays, and there are things to do afterwards. And I'm like, oh, my God, I have a life now. And I wake up every day with a purpose. And I was so happy. I was very sad, the idea that the person who was pregnant was coming back, and now she had her baby. So I went to see the principal, and I was like, I don't know, care what you want me, like, what you have for me. I really want to stay here. Even if I'm just coming in and ring the bell every day, like, I just want to be part of this school every day. Like, I love it. And he was like, well, the kids also like you. And I was tutoring the high school kids in math in my free time. So they went and told their parents and their professors that I really helped them. So he said, I'm going to create a position for you where you're going to be a math specialist, and you're just going to support all the teachers from grade 6 to 12 with special needs students. And he gave me a contract for the whole year. And I was so happy, and like my whole family was, because they had never seen me this happy before.
So there's this common thread that runs through all these stories that totally and completely delights Rick and me. And it's this idea that the people really matter. And we're delighted. We're also very surprised that this theme is emerging. But in retrospect, we should not have been. Here's Rick talking about what he considers to be the most important thing he took from his previous career.
All right. So I was a young Starbucks manager, and I was at a conference in Seattle, something that we did every year. And I was listening to not Howard Schultz, but there was another Howard who was the COO of Starbucks, and he said this thing that really struck me as powerful, at the time, powerful for my Starbucks context, which was Starbucks is not in the coffee business serving people. They're in the people business serving coffee. Mm-hmm. And it was that idea of relationships, like the relationships we have with customers are more important than the transaction of buying a coffee. Mm-hmm. So, you know, fast forward a couple years and I found myself as a math educator, high school math educator, and quickly realized that I wasn't in the math business teaching students. I was in the student business teaching math. I took this Starbucks thing about relationships and translated it to my classroom experience.
And it not just translated, like it became the power cell of your classroom.
Right? It's my guiding star in terms of my work as a teacher. Like my relationships with students are as important or more important than the content I'm teaching them.
So why do people change careers to become teachers? Valentina felt a lack of social connection in the lab. I wanted to see a more direct impact in my work. Diarra longed for a sense of community that she wasn't getting sitting behind her computer on Wall Street. And Rick realized his calling was in the people business. You know, we left some fairly high status, high paying career paths, and we left them because we wanted to make more human connections. Learning with and from students helped us do just that and made us better teachers.
In the next edition of Teacher Voice, we'll hear more stories from career changers and about how the skills that they had in their professional setting translated into skills that they now use in the classroom.
Many, many thanks to our panelists for sharing their stories and their experiences. And a special thank you goes out to Brittany Franskowiak, an associate editor here at Kaleidoscope, who really helped us think about shaping this story. Thank you, Brittany. You are rad. Kaleidoscope and Teacher Voice are supported by the Knowles Teacher Initiative. You can find the current issue of Kaleidoscope, as well as the complete archives, at knowlesteachers.org/kaleidoscope. You can also follow the journal on social media. Look for the handle Educator Voices. And you can also search for Rick and me on Twitter. I am at Dr. Milks.
And I am at Rick, BRLW.